Welcome to the New York Jets Touchdown UK podcast. I'm Richie Driss in London, and joining me, as always, from New York is Mr. Dan the Knowledge Grasser. How are you, sir?
Richie, doing good, my friend. How are things on your side of the pond?
Listen, I bet you're good after the last few results, but we'll get into that in a second, because coming up on this episode, we're going to be talking to New York Jets defensive end Vinny Curry. We talk about nutrition with Chef Jess and team dietitian Nicolette Mentz. And Dan and I discuss celebrity Jets fans, and I found out the origins of where the team got its name as well. DG, there's only one place to start, isn't there? We need to talk about the Green Bay Packers match as we are recording this before the Jets game next week against the Denver Broncos. What a time to be alive! Am I right?
No doubt about it. I mean, this is probably the most excitement you've had with this football team now in a good number of years. You know, you go into that Green Bay game, and it's a place that's always difficult to get a victory in Lambeau Field. The Packers had not lost two games in a row under their current head coach, Matt LaFleur, and he's been there since 2019. You got Aaron Rodgers, who's the two-time reigning MVP. This was going to be a difficult task, and if you watch that game and the way that unfolded, Jets just line up and beat the Packers. Nothing really crazy about it. I mean, they were the better football team. They wore the Packers out over 60 minutes. And this was that cliche win, Richie, where you say all three phases, the complementary football. Yeah, the defense went out there and I felt dominated the football game. You had the special teams make big plays. They had a blocked field goal. They had a blocked punt, which resulted in a scoop and score for a touchdown the other way. And then that running game got going, especially in the second half of the game when the Packers were worn down a little bit and they absolutely just put it away. All three phases coming together, as good and as quality a win that you could ask for from this football team.
And make no mistake, it was a bit of an underdog victory for the Jets, wasn't it? I would liken it to the equivalent of, say, in the Premier League, Fulham beating like a Liverpool, for example. If you put money on that as a Jets fan wanting a Jets win, you'd have got that back and then a lot more, wouldn't you?
Probably. Absolutely. I mean, well, the line was, I think, maybe like a touchdown or something like that. But it was one of those games at the beginning of the season, like everybody does this, right? Like the schedule comes out in the spring and people look at it and say, oh, well, this is a win. This is a loss. This is a win. Because you're baking these assumptions off of how the teams were the previous year. And that's the beauty of the NFL. It really is. From one season to the next, parity reigns supreme. You just don't know how good or how bad teams are going to be. And I'm sure that a lot of people looked at that and said, oh, Jets, team that struggled the last couple of years, going into Green Bay, there's no way they're going to win that football game. Look what happened. And that's the beauty of this league, right? And now maybe the tide is turning here for this football team, and it's a really exciting time to be involved with it.
As we speak, Jets are 4 wins, 2 losses before they play Denver. Can this team give any other side a really good game now? Do you reckon they picked up the momentum that they need?
Absolutely. And like I said, if you go back and you watch the tape, you watch the film or whatever, I mean, they're just lining up and beating guys. You know, I always say that football games are won and lost in the line of scrimmage, at the trenches, offensive line, defensive line. That's really after where you exert your will. And they've done that so far. You know what I mean? On both sides of the football, and especially on defense here. And when you think about the guys who are the key contributors on this football team right now, the core is based on young players. It's the guys who were part of this draft class last year, the draft class this season, the rookies. I mean, these rookies are not playing like rookies. They're just really good football players. And I think that the NFL, the rest of the league, slowly but surely, they're starting to realize that, you know what? There's a lot of talent on this football team, and you got to watch out for them, and you better not come in napping because they're going to make you pay.
This is it. And it wasn't even as if it was a narrow victory. It was comprehensive as well. Was there a specific moment that was a bit of a highlight for you?
Well, obviously the scoop and score with the punt block, right? I mean, because that doesn't happen so often. And those are game-changing plays, you know, momentum-changing plays. And then once they did that, because remember the first half of the game, it was kind of like a slog a little bit. It was 3-3, not much going offensively for either side. And then you're just looking for that play that's kind of turned the tide a little bit. And so they put together a nice drive. They got the Berrios touchdown to go up 10-3. And then they come back and get the block punt and add on another special teams touchdown, making it a 2-score game. And as you said, Richie, they kind of ran away from the Packers. It wasn't like they had to sweat this one out down the stretch. I mean, Green Bay took Aaron Rodgers out of the game. They took him out of the game because they waved the white flag and said, it's over. It's done. We lose. We'll take a knee. That's what probably a lot of people weren't expecting. But when you're a good football team, these things happen. And this is the makings of a good football team.
And no one can take that away from the New York Jets. That's for sure. Now, we're looking for your forfeits. That's some ideas for something the loser of the England versus USA World Cup soccer match has to do. It could be anything within reason, eating something weird, wearing something weird, etc. Get your mind, put your minds to work, get creative, send us your ideas on the socials.
I'm dreading this. Like, as we get closer, and we're still about, you know, a month away, a few weeks or whatever. Like, I just dread this with each passing day as we get closer to this match. I really and truly do.
Funny you say that. I'm getting more and more excited. Send us your ideas on the socials.
I wonder
by
why.
Using,
I wonder why.
Use our hashtag JetsTouchdownUK. Please get involved and make it as tasty as possible so that DG has to, I don't know, run through Times Square wearing... I was going to say nothing at all. No one wants to see that. Don't do that. That's for sure.
Well, that's any day in Times Square, though. It doesn't have to be based on a bet. That's what, you know, you see that any day you walk through Times Square.
Yeah, you wouldn't stick out at all.
No.
DG, as you know, I am fascinated by food, to say the least. I spent most of our interview with Nick Mangold talking about barbecue sauce. So the Jets have kindly arranged for executive performance chef Jess and team dietitian Nikki Mentz to join us to chat all things food on the pod. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. Nikki, I need to ask you first things first. How on earth do you become a team dietitian?
So growing up, I always played sports, grew up playing soccer. I have three older brothers and they played all the sports and I ended up just playing soccer because I think I just wanted to be like them. And so I went to college, Northern Illinois University, and I played soccer there. And I kind of just put two and two together. I realized how much food affected my performance on the field. And I've always loved sports and I've always loved food. So it was meant to be.
Nikki, when you say to me that you realize that sport and nutrition go hand in hand, and this was also during your time at college, university to us, does that mean that you were really, really hungover one day trying to play football and it was just not going according to plan? So you thought, I need to sort myself out. You could be honest.
No, definitely not.
That wasn't the case.
Not for me, maybe for some of my teammates, but not for me. I think I realized my workload when I was a freshman, it was just way more than I was used to. So my body changed a lot my freshman year and I was actually under fueling. So then I realized when I started to fuel properly, how much of a difference that actually made on my performance compared to when I was under fueling myself.
Right. So how did you then make this transition into, okay, you know what? I'm interested in this. It ties in with sports, which is something that I certainly am a fan of. Mm-hmm. How does this become your career path then?
So obviously there are many different career paths that you can take as a dietitian. You can work in a clinical setting. You can do work in large corporations for wellness. You can work in grocery stores, obviously sports. So for me, you always have to go and find a dietetic internship. So I went to Eastern Illinois University where I did my master's my first year and then my internship my second year. And with the internship, you have mandated rotations that you have to do and complete a certain amount of hours. And there was a rotation where you can kind of pick and do what you want. And I was located in a hospital that had two local smaller colleges. And I knew I never wanted to work in a hospital. I knew I never wanted to do food service. Sorry, Jess. and so I knew I always wanted to be in sports. And so I reached out to those small colleges and kind of just did team talks for the women's volleyball team, cross country, just to get my foot in the door and have something on my resume. Because it is all about having that experience getting into a collegiate field. And then once I graduated there, passed my exam, and I got my foot in the door at the University of Missouri. And I was a sports dietitian there for my first job.
Chef Jess, I've got to say, you are our third CJ to come on the podcast. We had CJ Mosley and we had CJ Uzoma as well. And now we've got Chef Jess. Tell us, what's the difference between cooking in a kitchen for an entire NFL team and, say, maybe working in a restaurant?
So they're very different. So I like to describe our operation as a different restaurant every day. The guys, obviously, at this level have as much flexibility in their monetary values to be able to go and get anything they want. So we kind of have to compete with what's out there against everybody. We want to put out the food that's both something that they desire from, you know, just a comfort standpoint as well as a performance standpoint. So we are very different in that way. Our menu changes every single day, every single meal.
What does the meal prep consist of? Is it just, okay, I'm preparing the meals for when the players are here at the facility, given whatever the time of day is, or are you actually preparing meals that they could take home with them. And if they don't feel like cooking or don't know how to cook, and I've put myself in that category, that they can also eat when they're at home and make sure they're eating the right things.
Absolutely. So it's both the meals while they're here as well as when they go home. So they always have those options available to them. And if an athlete here decides that they don't want the grab and go options that we've already set up, they can come see me or anybody on my team privately, and we'd be happy to set that up for them. So yeah, lots of opportunity.
And with that, I also work with a place local that does meal prep for the guys outside of here. And some guys have their own personal chefs as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was going to ask, CJ, have you ever turned a player's request down for food because it's not healthy enough? Have they ever come to you behind the scenes and said, I really want pizza tonight? And you're like, no.
That's more me turning it down.
I'll be honest, I do field a lot of that through Nikki. I was like, well, let me just ask how Nikki feels with your performance plan. But yeah, it's hard to say no sometimes when they want something like that. But we have bigger goals in mind.
Do you find that players are of the picky variety? Because I'm a very picky eater, you know that. So like, I don't know. I mean, obviously you could just go with the flow, but sometimes if I don't feel like eating stuff that, let's say, you prepare for the team, I might just come up to you and say, well, you know, kind of in the mood for this or that. Do you have anything else? Like, how willing are you to work with some of these guys who may be a little, you know, out of the norm?
So I am thankful to say that Nikki does field a lot of the pickiness for me. They do feel
Nikki's the bad guy then.
Yeah, we do have a good cop, bad cop thing going on for sure. The guys are pretty generous with their compliments and stuff at the training table. I will say to my face, they're very happy to be getting whatever they're getting with us, but they will behind the scenes go to Nikki and be like, hey, too much curry lately, so let's just switch that up. And then we're happy to accommodate as well.
You've got 53 players that you work with. Does that mean you need to accommodate different players' food needs for each different position? And in fact, how many are on your team altogether?
How many on the team altogether, Nikki?
I think there's about 70. Mm-hmm. So we have 53 on the roster, and then 16 practice squad players. And then depending on how many guys we have on IR, so give or take 70 to 80, kind of depends on where we're at injury-wise and whatnot.
And then coaches and stuff too, right? Like, it's a big staff, a big family, mm-hmm. and everything. So, I mean, there is a large quantity of folks that, and they all fall into the same category pretty much, right?
Absolutely. Yes. In addition to the coaches and players and support staff, we also have the business operations team that we're feeding daily. So on an average basis, we're feeding between 250 to 300 people every single meal. So there is a lot of accommodation happening to make sure that everybody's satisfied. And with that, we just do a wide variety of options to make sure everyone has something that they enjoy.
Now, Richie, I don't know if you know this, but Nikki also, her husband is involved in sports as well. He is the assistant hitting coach for the Toronto Blue Jays in Major League Baseball. So I'm curious, not we're going to get into how you guys met, all that stuff. Forget that. It's, you know, a different show. But being in sports, both of you, two different sports, mm-hmm. and of course, he's up in Canada, but that's only a seasonal job, though. How does that kind of, you know, play off of itself, given that you both work in the same field, essentially, but with two different sports?
So it's interesting because their coaches or assistant GM will reach out to me and ask, like, how I do certain things, like operation.
Really?
Just in terms of, like, nutrition. Like, because obviously they have a major league team and then they have six minor league teams underneath. So they have a head dietitian, and then each of the teams have a dietitian. So it's interesting to hear how their day-to-day operation is. And obviously they're playing every single day, so it's completely different than what we're doing here on a daily basis in terms of recovery, fueling for an actual game. Like, our guys are basically going to war on Sundays and they're casually playing nine innings of baseball.
Right. Standing out in the sun in the summertime, you know.
Eating seeds in the dugout.
Sunflower seeds, gum, all that stuff.
Exactly. But it's very interesting to kind of just discuss, like, what they're doing, what they're eating, what we're eating here. We talk about that a lot at home.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Would you say that you need to adapt due to the different positions? So a wide receiver wouldn't necessarily have the same meal as, like, a big tackle.
Yes. And I work a lot with our sports scientist, Matt Sams, and the data that he provides to us in terms of each position, but more importantly, each individual's workload that day, whether it be practice or whether it be a game. Because within a position group, you could have somebody that's working way harder than somebody else in that position group. So it's not necessarily a position group that you need to fuel differently. It's actually each individual player that you have to kind of individualize.
Jess, how many chefs are working in the kitchen? Just can't be you yourself.
It's definitely not just me, myself. I have an executive executive sous chef as well as another sous chef, and the three of us plus our food service director. And then we have a team of about 12 to 15 other individuals that make the operation run every day.
Wow, that's huge. And is one
takes
of you
an army.
I know, right? Yeah, it does. Is anyone ever responsible for, say, looking at, how do I put this, advances in nutrition? I was going to say technology, but it's actually food at the end of the day. So like superfoods and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I think like there's always research coming out day to day. And it's kind of just what's the new fad. And honestly, like you'll have a lot of players after specifically like a Netflix documentary come out that talks about eating just meat or food over four, any of those documentaries. So there's always nutrition information out there, and it's kind of educating the players on what's actually accurate and what's not, what's educational and what's necessarily not. But yeah, there's new fads out there every single day.
What about games? Like, I'm curious because like, obviously probably easier when there's home games because it's a lot closer in proximity. You guys preparing the food that the players eat, like to go, let's say after a game, I see that they have like, kind of like, you know, to go carry out meals or whatnot. And also the same thing on the road as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and even on the airplane. So I'll do the airplane menus prior to the season starting. So I work with our in-flight coordinator at United to.
Well, Aaron told us you guys, they have Chick-fil-A on the plane.
Yes.
I mean, that's a big one, Rich.
That's their pre-departure meal. And then they have actual meals after that. but yeah, post-game, I work with the operations staff here to do our post-game meals at MetLife. And then on the road, I work with MJ, one of our operation members, and do all the post-game meals.
Mm-hmm. And then at the hotel, we also set up the menu. So it's the same at every hotel, whether it's away or whether it's home, they have the exact same menu so they can plan their performance model. And then I'll have a meeting with the chef prior to going out. And then I also go out and then taste test the food. And, you know, if it's not seasoned the way that we try to do it here at the facility, we try to get it as close to home as possible so that the guys can know what they're going to expect on the road.
Excellent. Excellent. See, that a lot of planning, Rich, that probably the average fan doesn't even maybe take into account when they're just worrying about a football game.
Yeah. I bet. That's incredible. But speaking of being like on the road and planes, word on the street is that when you came over to London, you bought your own sauces, condiments, ketchup, mayonnaise with you. We have got Heinz over here. Is it that bad? Like, what's the difference? What's going on?
So yes, Jess and I worked together and we shipped not just sauces, but sauces mainly like 2 months before we went out there. Mm-hmm. It's just because, like Jess was saying, when we're on the road, like at hotels, we keep the same menu because guys are familiar and they know what they have here and they're somewhat superstitious. So if they're eating barbecue sauce on their chicken the night before a game, they're going to want to eat that barbecue sauce on their chicken the night before the game, whether we're in Pittsburgh or whether we're in London. So we wanted to make it as familiar as possible for them. And sauces is a big thing for these guys.
And we never know what we're going to run into. So it's also just being an overprepared. You can never be too overprepared, right? So one of the things that did come up at the London Hotel is we have a very specific gummy bear that they get the night before the game. It's a little treat for them. It's the same everywhere. And I got to run all over town with MJ, taste testing all of your gummy bears to try to find the one that was as close to it as possible. And the guys noticed. They said, you know, where are the gummy bears? And you know what? Unfortunately, we didn't win that game, and I'm just going to blame it on the gummy bears. Okay?
So it was the gummy bears.
It was definitely all this time.
See, Richie, I would think you would be really good at something like that. Like, that is something like, you know, Richie on the scene, like finding the optimal gummy bear for the Jets players to have the night before the game.
I'm just picturing the players in the dressing room flipping tables over because they didn't get their gummy bears in fury. Have you guys heard of brown sauce? Is that a thing out there? Have you ever tried it?
Like gravy?
No, not like gravy. No, gravy's brown? Gravy. Brown sauce like, is brown sauce.
Well, like what's the brown sauce?
Yeah, like what's in it? Maybe it's something we call different here.
I'm not sure what it's. I think you guys may call it steak sauce, or it might be similar to steak sauce. It's the sort of thing A1? That you. I don't know what that means, but that's a motorway. An A1 over here is a highway or a motorway.
That's not our main steak sauce brand, but I have tried your brown sauce, and you serve it at breakfast, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yes. What do you think?
It is very similar. I am not going to probably put it on my eggs at breakfast, but nothing wrong with it at all.
That's right. Last week he was telling me, what was that thing you were telling me that people, it's a hot drink that people drink at games. It's like a broth, like a beef. Yeah. Like a beef broth or something. they drink at a game, right? Yeah. I couldn't wrap my mind around that one.
Well, we give guys broth on the sidelines when it's cold.
But like fans drink this. It's not like at the game. Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't, you know, I assume it's the greatest thing in the world because like you said, you told me about it and it's very popular, but it's just not something that is translated over here yet.
Yeah. We would be drinking hot chocolate.
Right. Yeah. Hot chocolate, coffee, that type of thing to stay warm or other things that maybe we won't name on a family show here like this.
Yeah. Final question. I need to ask you about this. What was your favorite food when you came over to the UK? I know it wasn't brown sauce.
It definitely wasn't brown sauce. I didn't have it, but the fish and chips the hotel made for us was pretty good. The French fries were nice and crispy, just like I like them.
And I wasn't prepared for the boys to eat as many portions as they did. So I had told the team chef or the hotel chef, you know, probably 80 will be good. They're coming from practice, fried food, and they went through at least double that. So that was definitely very popular.
And you pre-scouted the fish and chips, I assume? Everything was like you do with the other stuff.
Of course.
Awesome.
Of course.
Have to, Richie.
Love that. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. It was fascinating.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
DG, Man City played Liverpool. I couldn't help but notice Will Arnett tweeting that Liverpool had won and being a big, big fan. And it got me to thinking, who are the New York Jets fans of note? This is what I want to talk to you about, because Will Arnett being a Liverpool fan, as a Man United fan, is really heartbreaking because I loved him in BoJack Horseman. I loved him in Arrested Development. So let's talk about this. New York Jets fans of the celebrity kind.
Jet fans that are obviously, I mean, you got to go with Adam Sandler, the comedian. Of course, he's a big Jets fan here. Ralph Macchio, the Karate Kid, Cobra Kai. I mean, he was at a game, our last home game, a couple of weeks ago. Larry David, another
legend.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, creator of Seinfeld. He's a big Jets fan. Those are the ones that come to me. You know, first and foremost, probably. I'm sure there's a lot of others, but those three ring true. And what does it say? You know, like two of them are comedians. You know, do you have to have a sense of humor to be a Jets fan? I don't know, right?
Do they have any impact on, say, the squad necessarily? Do they go into the changing room and give them a bit of a chit chat, or are they special guests at the games, or do you see them just in the stands staying out of the way?
Yeah, they'll hang out on the sidelines maybe before the game, you know, during warm-ups and so on and so forth. But I don't think, like, they go into the locker room and they're chatting it up with the players and things like that. I think it's just they're there for support, and then they go and they root and cheer during the game. But I think anytime you get them representing the Jets and, you know, kind of showing face a little bit, I think it works good, don't you?
I certainly do. I was just thinking to myself, I can't imagine Larry David doing any sort of motivational team talk in the locker room. It would just be insulting everyone and telling them whether they're good or not, probably. That's for sure. What are the chances of us getting Larry David on the pod?
I we won't know until we try. I don't know why we don't. I mean, we still have what? We still have a good number of these still to do before the end of the season. And let me say, the Jets are winning, right? This looks like it's shaping up to be probably a nice positive season for us. Maybe, just maybe, we put out a couple of feelers, throw the Jets muscle around a little bit and say, hey, you know, Larry, LD, what do you think? Maybe we got this great podcast. You want to come on? Big fans. I think we can make it happen.
Listen, if we get LD on the pod, I will pay for my flights and fly out there for 24 hours just to be there.
I do it for free. You don't have to pay. I do it for free.
Okay, DG, I did a little bit of research and I found some celebrities that are apparently Jets fans. And I'm wondering if you've ever seen them in a stadium, if you can confirm or deny. So we've got Adam Sandler, who you already said, for sure. Actor Kevin James.
Kevin James has been to games. Absolutely. We forgot Kevin James. He's a Jet fan. Yes, he's a Jets-Mets guy, if you want to tie in the baseball equivalent. That's the popular thing, by the way. Like, and this isn't just like celebrities, too. It's just kind of like in general. When you talk about the New York football teams and the baseball teams, it's generally a Mets-Jets and then Yankees-Giants. Like, that seems to be the norm as far as the allegiances go for most fans.
So Jay-Z, who made the Yankee fitted more famous than a Yankee can, I hope you got that reference.
I got
He's
that,
a Giants fan.
Maybe, may not. I don't know about Jay-Z's football affiliation. I don't know. But yeah, gotcha. He goes to Yankee games. He's Mr. Yankee.
Yeah, I can't. We can't always trust Google, but apparently he's a New York Jets fan. Chris Rock.
Chris Rock might be a Jet fan. Like, I think I might remember something from way back when to where he was either at a game or you know, showing it. I know he's a Mets fan. I know Chris Rock is a Mets fan, and he's from Chris Rock is from Brooklyn, I think. But I remember, you know, he goes to Mets games all the time, and so he might be in that Mets-Jets thing.
Gotcha. What about Nas, best rapper alive? Born in Queensbridge. Any idea?
Don't know. Could not tell you about Nas.
Ray Romano?
Ray Romano's a Jets fan. Yeah, because he's been to games. Yeah, that's another one. See, it's the comedians. A lot of these comedians are like, well, it's from the New York area too, originally. Yes. Yeah, so Ray Romano, Jets fan. I know that. Yes.
This guy's not a comedian, but you'll definitely know who he is. George R. R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones.
Yes, he is a Jets fan. You're right about that. That's a good one. Yes.
That is a good one. James Gandolfini's son, who appeared in the follow-up film, The Many Saints of Newark. I don't know if you've seen it. Good film.
Michael.
Yes. New York Jets fan.
Jets fan, and James was too. They would go to get, there was, you know, pictures and videos and whatnot when, you know, Michael was a little kid and he was at games and they would go together. Yeah, he was a huge Jets fan, and you're right. And his son is too. His son actually did something for us last year. He recorded he voiced something, I think, before one of the games, maybe the season opener or something.
Wonderful. Well, this is this big list of names that we need to get on the pod. 50 Cent.
Not sure. Couldn't tell you.
Not sure.
Yeah.
Got another one.
You know, do you ever see the video of 50 Cent throwing out the first pitch at the Mets game, though?
Oh, yeah.
That's classic. Classic.
Oh, that was really embarrassing.
50 Cent.
Oh,
50 Cent. I have confirmation. 50 Cent was at a game last year.
Brilliant. There you go. Method Man. Icon.
He's a huge Jet fan. Huge.
There you go. Love that. Method Man. Get him on the pod. That's for sure. Get the whole of Wu-Tang Clan on the pod. That'd be amazing.
We've got enough chairs in here. I don't see why we can't have them all in. I mean, we have enough microphones. Why not? Jadakiss voiced something for us this year, too. How about that?
He did. I saw that promo video, and I thought that is incredible, because I've seen Jadakiss in concert. So having seen that he voiced the season hype video, you would call it?
Welcome to the season. Yep, exactly. So you see, I think you have to be somewhat of a fan to agree to do something like that, because these people have other opportunities to make a buck. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or, you know, so you have to be a fan. You have to have the passion behind it. So I think that absolutely they got to be fans.
And finally, Christian Pulisic, the Chelsea forward, New York Jets fan.
He went to the game last year in London. He was at the game last year. Jets fan. Yes. Good one. Good call by you.
Right now, it's time to jive with a Jet. You know, it's one of my favorite parts of the show. And joining us today is a man who has won a Super Bowl ring with the Philadelphia Eagles. And let's be honest, he's also trying to win one with the New York Jets. And he fits in with the vibe of the show because of his surname. Hello, defensive end Vinny Curry. Nice of you to join us when we've just been talking about nutrition. How are you, sir?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Good man. Listen, I need to start off asking you about your health situation, because you signed with the New York Jets in March 2021, but you didn't make your debut until we played the Packers recently, right?
Right, correct. Definitely. So what happened is I almost had a spleen rupture. My spleen was swollen, so I had to have my spleen removed. But yesterday was all worth it.
You know, when you're going through something like that and you have to miss time away from football, when you get back out on the field like you did in the Green Bay game, do you gain a greater appreciation for it all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially for me, this is going on year 11. So I was missing the game so much last year that I kept doing things to my house. I gutted the house, started doing remodeling stuff. I spent most of my time on Pinterest. It was crazy.
No, I bet. But it speaks to sort of your tenacity and your motivation to get back out there, as to how much you love the sport. What was your main motivation, do you think?
I have a 2-year-old daughter. I just wanted my daughter to see me play. That was my motivation. I said, oh, my daughter's going to see me play. She's going to see me play. She's going to see me play. I got a 5-year-old son as well. He loves the game. And all he would say is, you ain't got practice today? You ain't got practice today? He didn't quite understand.
Right.
But yesterday, you know, during the game, my wife sent me this video of the kids. They're going crazy and everything. And I was like, man, this is why you fight to get back right here. So.
And what was it being out there? I mean, not only because, you know, you guys had a great performance, and really the defense and the defensive line specifically, I think, led the charge in that football game, but just that feeling of being out there with your guys playing in an extremely high level. I mean, when you think back to the last couple of years and what it's been like for you, it's got to be immensely gratifying, does it not?
Oh, man. It was definitely worth it. You know, those guys practice super hard. Coach Wykott and get us ready each and every week. So for those guys to go out there and click on all cylinders, and I mean the whole entire group, it was just amazing to be a part of and amazing to see.
Now, I mean, as we mentioned earlier, you do have a Super Bowl ring to your name, and that's a brilliant achievement. But surely making your debut for the New York Jets after everything that you went through is right up there as well, right?
Definitely, definitely. Oh, man, that was – and at Lambeau. We can't forget that. That stadium.
Historic venue.
Yeah, I must say thank you. Like, and then, you know, to make the debut there, to leave with the win, you know, and for us to be on this run that we are on right this second, you know, man, it was great. It was – words can't describe how the emotions and how I felt yesterday.
How about the guys that you share that defensive line with? You know, I mean, it's no secret you guys don't lack talent in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, veterans like yourself, young players who were just bursting onto the scene. What about the mix of this group, and where can this group go?
Oh, man, this guy's the limit for this group. Starting with Quinton Williams, he's having a monster season. You know, Sheldon Rankins is a monster. JFM is a monster. Carl Lawson is a monster. Jermaine and Mike, they're monsters. Bryce Huff is a monster. You know,
you a monster?
Sally's a monster. I would like to say so.
You're a monster. Richie's a monster.
Yeah, I would like to say so. Shep is a monster, man. And then, you know, we got guys like, you know, Tenzel, John Marshall, you know, Bradley. They guys, they help our group out as well. You know, what you don't see during the week is how those guys, you know, get our offense ready to go. Mm-hmm. You know, just because they're on practice squad, those guys are high talented guys that any given moment, you know, their number could be called and they could be making plays out there for us.
Vinny, you provided me the perfect segue. Thank you so much for making my job easier, because I wanted to talk to you and I wanted you to break down what a typical week for an athlete like you entails. So, like, let's start with a Monday. The day was obviously a victory today, but what does a typical Monday for you look like?
Our Monday starts with, you know, with a little bit of reason. So, for like myself, you know, I get in the building around 7:30. I cold tub, hot tub, shower. Now it's time to, you know, do a little jog with the team, and we do a little run just to get the soreness out, get the kinks out. Mm-hmm. Then we lift, and then after we lift, we have lunch. Then after lunch, what you do is, you know, you have the special teams meeting. For special teams meeting, you go to your unit meeting, which is offense, defense. You know, from that meeting, you go to your position meeting, and then you correct or go over the film on what you saw, what you should have done, what could have you done better, you know, what to look for the following week. And then from that meeting, you is another food segment. You know, they love to feed us. So, yeah. So
we just talked to the chef and the nutritionist actually earlier today. So, yeah.
Yeah, they do a great job here. They do a great job, by the way. But you go from that meeting, and then that's your Monday. Now, your Tuesday is your day off. But for most of us, Tuesday is your day to really, you know, rather go get, you know, acupuncture, massage, hydrate, to get ready for that Wednesday practice. You know, a lot of iPad film study. So then when Wednesday come, you go over everything, you try to put the game plan in, and you break it up in segments. So you go over that game plan, and then you go out to practice, and then Thursday, the next game plan, and Friday is what we like to call Fast Friday, and you polish everything up. You know, what you're going to use, what plays that I'm a little iffy on, everything like that, and then the coaches come up with the final sums, and there you go. Saturday's walkthrough, Sunday's game day.
Tuesday, your day off. Do you use it as a time to completely 100% get away from football to kind of like clear your mind? Or is there always something going on related to that next opponent that you have to school up on?
Definitely got to keep watching the iPad, man. Mm-hmm. You know, but Tuesday should be dedicated to your body. You know, we do so much, you know, with the body, man. Rather, you got to take care of it, though. Got to get the body a little bit of TLC. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, rather it's acupunctures, then massage, then if I'm still a little stiff, go see a chiropractor, you know. But and I was taught that, you know, from the veterans from when I came into the league, and the only thing you could do is just pass that knowledge now.
Vinny, is there a particular day of the week that you look forward to or dread on the other side?
Well, here it will be, you know, Thursday. We have pads on, so you see things a little quicker, get a little pop, a little feel on how things are going to look, you know, on Sunday. And our look team on offense does a great job of giving us the best look, man. And I want to get them credit because they do a great job to prepare us and execute the game plan on what the coaches think we're going to see and the looks that we're going to get on Sunday.
And Richie, what he's talking about there when he says the look team, that's kind of like what they call the scout team, the practice squad. And those guys, essentially what they're doing is they're running the plays that the upcoming opponent likes to feature as they get them ready for that week's game. So when he says the look team, like it, all the foundation is done in practice, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
everything you see on Sunday, it's stuff that you guys have worked on during the week.
And that's why they say that it takes the team. It takes the whole entire village to put this thing together. You know, not what you just see on Sunday. It's the preparation that just begin us to where we need to be to.
What advice do you, because you said you're 11 years into this league now.
Right.
The average career is what, maybe three or four years?
Three or four years.
You've outlived that and then some. You've had a tremendous career.
Yes.
When young guys in this league, you know, come into the building, come into that locker room or whatnot, maybe first year, second year players, what advice do you give them as to last as long as you did in this league?
Take care of your body. Mm-hmm. You know, take care of your body, man. You gotta listen to the body, take care of it. It's going to help you in the long run.
And especially coming from someone who's had the experience that you've had as well. But how does, say, a winning Sunday or having to travel for a game as well differ from, say, if you're losing or if you don't have to travel? Are there any huge differences between the result and whether or not you've got to travel and not? Or do you keep things fairly regular?
Keep things fairly regular. You can't get too high, can't get too low in this game. You know, you just got to stay the course. And our coaching staff does a great job at keeping us, you know, kind of, you know, level headed and, you know, can't get too high, can't get too low. So
you got a Super Bowl ring. Right. You won one with Philadelphia. And obviously that's the ultimate goal when you come into the league, professional sports. Can you think back to the way you were before winning that Super Bowl ring versus now you're continuing your career? You know what that feeling is like,
right?
And to try to recapture that feeling and maybe to pass it on to some of the guys in that room who haven't had that taste yet.
Oh, man, that's the feeling we're chasing. You know, there's a couple of guys on this team that actually played in the Super Bowl. But, you know, I think that's everybody's goal. You know, since you've been playing this game as a kid, we hope your goal is to win the Super Bowl and multiple Super Bowls. You know what I mean? So we're just clicking together right now and, you know, keeping our head down and still chopping at the wood, you know, to have the opportunity to play for that Lombardi Trophy, which is the Super Bowl trophy.
Yep.
Let's talk that Sunday in a little bit more depth. Let's say it's game day and you're just about to go out on that field. You're sat in a changing room. What's your mindset? What do you do? Do you listen to music? Do you just sit and maybe meditate? What is it you're listening to? Talk us through it.
Oh, man. So I talk to my kids first. And then I just put the music on, man. I play a lot of, you know, 50 Cent, DMX,
nice,
you know, type of music, and get myself all the way pumped up and get myself ready to go. You know, I try not to be too amped, but you know, sometimes your emotions take over, and it is what it is. So,
anybody in the locker room that you know of, like before the game when they're all got listening to music, got the headphones on, or anybody that you played with, anybody go classical music? Because, like, I mean, some people just like to chill out completely. Like,
nah,
they just
nah,
to be in
nah.
a calm, full, peaceful.
Yeah, yeah.
No classical music,
nah,
huh?
Nah.
No Beethoven or anything like
no,
that, huh?
I haven't came across that. I haven't came across that.
Yeah, DJ, you're trying to get your mind right before you go out and do something impressive. Like before this podcast, I sit and I listen to Nas and Mobb Deep and DMX to get myself hyped to put in a performance for this pod.
Telling you, like, whatever puts your mind in in the best mindset, mm-hmm. whatever makes you happy, like that music that makes you just super happy, like, oh, this is my jam. That's what you want to listen to before going out and giving it your all.
Richie, I got to continue the food theme again because it's been a big, big subject on this show. How much do you eat before a game? Like, some people don't like to eat too much.
No,
you know,
I definitely like to eat too much. I, you know, I take a little bit of this, took a little bit of that, and because too much food, is definitely going to come up
right
in one of the quarters.
All right, so like 1 o'clock game. You know, most games are at 1 o'clock. Right. 1 o'clock game. What are you eating? When are you eating?
Probably, you know, getting some eggs. Piece of chicken, you know,
the protein.
Yep, and a little bit of rice. That's it.
How soon before kickoff? Or
I'm usually maybe a couple hours.
Yeah.
Like 4 hours, 5 hours before kickoff.
Because you don't want that coming back up on you, like you said, when you're playing the
exactly.
game.
Exactly. So
there's some, I mean, Richie, I don't know if like, you know, the soccer players, the football players over there, but unfortunately, and Vinny will tell you this, he probably played with some guys. Some guys have these weird pregame rituals that involve something we don't want to really talk about here on the show, but it involves eating too much food and like they feel that they have to do that before a game. That is the truth.
No, not me. I feel like, okay, I won't be able to run.
I don't blame you.
No, I don't blame you. Vinny, finally, have you been over to the UK and played a match over here or been over on vacation or anything like that?
No, I haven't. When the Jets went there last year, that's when I had the surgery. I was like, dang it. I wanted to go over there so bad. And I did see something coming up, though. I don't know if it's true, but I did see a rumor for – I'm a big WWE fan, and I seen a rumor that they're thinking about having a pay-per-view over there for WrestleMania. So it's going to force us to go over there. So, and I'm going to have a great time, man. I heard nothing but great things about the U.K., and I want to come over there and experience it.
WrestleMania UK, Richie, what do you think?
I will say, for the sake of Vinny, I'll say, yeah, I'm down for that. But in reality, I'm not. What I'll do, Vinny, instead is when you come over here, I'll introduce you to all that really good UK rap instead.
Listen, UK got some of the best drill music, you know. So, you know, we know some of them. Yeah. So, you got to introduce me to it.
Good man. Love that. Vinny, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Best wishes for the rest of the season as well. And congratulations on your comeback, because it's nothing short of phenomenal.
Man, thank you. Thank you for having me, man. All right.
Awesome. Thanks, Vinny.
No doubt.
Right, we've talked about the celebrity fans of the Jets, most of which have seen a lot of history. So with that in mind, let's dive into the Jets' history.
Yeah.
Where did the name the New York Jets come from?
That's a good question. Where did the name Jets come from? Well, they used to be the Titans. When they came into the American Football League, which was in 1960, if I'm not mistaken, they were called the New York Titans, and they did not look anything like they did right now. Their uniforms were kind of like navy and gold, not as flattering as the ones that we have now, obviously. But then there was a gentleman by the name of Sonny Werblin who bought the team in 1963. And then when he bought the team, came up with Jets, legend would have it, because they were going to be playing in Shea Stadium where the Mets baseball team was playing, as we talked about. Jets rhymed with Mets. And Shea Stadium out there in Queens was located not too far from good old LaGuardia Airport. And there was always this running joke that whether there was a baseball game or a football game being played at Shea Stadium, you would guarantee yourself countless times that there would be a plane flying overhead the stadium because it was either leaving or arriving down there at LaGuardia. So the proximity of the airport rhymes with Mets. That's why we're the Jets. You see, where's my thing? Jets, right here.
There it is. What an incredible answer. I feel richer of spirit for having asked that.
And that was something that came very naturally, by the way. We didn't have to research that. We didn't have to, you know, ask about 58 people to get that answer. That just came very organically.
It's because we're professionals. 100%. Absolute professionals. Love that. What an answer. What a stat. The more you know, am I right?
The more you know, knowledge is power, as they say.
This is it. Good knowledge. Love that. Did you ever go to the old stadium? And what was that like?
Well, technically they've had three old stadiums. They began playing in the Polo Grounds as the Titans, which no longer exists anymore. Then in 1964, they moved to Shea Stadium, which is where the Mets played baseball for the longest of time. So Shea Stadium no longer exists either. So from 64 to 84, that's where they played their games. Then they moved to the Meadowlands in 1984, and they shared the old Meadowlands Stadium with the Giants. Now, that was my first exposure to going to games. So the first games I went to and all that stuff, that was at the old Meadowlands Stadium. And now, of course, we have the big, beautiful MetLife Stadium here. So technically, yeah, four different buildings this franchise has played games in.
DG, can you explain the colors green and white to me? It's lovely, but I wondered if there was a story behind it.
They look very, very lovely, of course. And I'm glad you asked that question, Richie, because once upon a time, when Sonny Werblin took over as the owner of the football team, and they wanted to make the transition from Titans, right? We talked about the change to the name Jets and so on and so forth. Originally, he wanted to make the team colors red, white, and blue. And it turns out he was turned down by the American Football League at the time because I don't know if it had anything to do with there was the Boston Patriots who had similar colors as well. So maybe they wanted a little bit of variety. So Sonny Werblin also had a horse racing stable, and the colors of the stable were green and white. That plus the fact that Sonny Werblin's birthday was on none other than St. Patrick's Day, which is, of course, littered with green. The stable, St. Paddy's Day. That's how we got to the Jets football team being the green and white, which we all know and love.
I mean, if you're going to have your team colors after any day of the year, St. Patrick's Day is a pretty good one, isn't it?
Absolutely. Especially, you know what, if it's your birthday, how can you pass that up?
Tell us a little bit about the very first match that you ever went to. Let's take the clock back. What is it? 10, 15 years since you went to your first match?
I wish that was the case. Long time ago. September the 21st, 1986.
Stop it, DG. Stop that. You were born in 1996.
I wish I could say. But anyway, no, seriously. September 21st, 1986. It actually went to the game with my dad. It was actually one of the most famous games probably in the history of the Jets. One of the most exciting games. It was week three of the season at the old Meadowlands Stadium. Jets-Dolphins, the big rivalry. Ken O'Brien, the Jet quarterback, Dan Marino, of course, the Hall of Famer, the Dolphin quarterback, they put on a show that day. The final was 51-45. The Jets beat the Dolphins in overtime. O'Brien hit Wesley Walker for a game-tying touchdown late in the fourth quarter. Then he hooked up with Walker again for the game winner in overtime. Was one of the most thrilling games. Even as a young kid, I remember it vividly. And this is me thinking, hey, all games are going to be like this. They're going to be exciting. The Jets are going to win. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. But that's still one of the most memorable games in the history of this franchise. And it, by some stroke of luck, it was the first one that I ever went to.
Wow. Some would say you peaked very, very early. Was it love ever since then?
That's exactly what it is. And we're here today and we're doing this conversation with you right now. And think about how things have transpired and led to this moment. So it's great. It's all good.
Let's get into some UK versus USA World Cup predictions. This is a bit of a twist on our usual formula. DG, you look terrified. We need to get involved in the World Cup predictions because it's the biggest, definitely the biggest soccer tournament in the world, that's for sure.
Of course.
And we're going to get in there ahead of the pack. So, the first one.
By the way, do you know, the commercials here are running nonstop now already. They've been running for, I would say, probably about the last 3 weeks. Because here in the United States, Fox is televising the World Cup. Like, they have the big soccer rights now and everything. So, you know the actor John Hamm?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Suits.
He,
Baby
right.
Driver.
Mad Men. All that's that television show.
Yeah.
So they have him portraying Santa Claus, and it's, you know, supposedly during the holidays. And then he gets word that there is the World Cup during the holidays. And so he's insulted that now there's something else infringing upon his time of the year. So that's like the ad campaign that's been running. But whether you're watching football, baseball, anything on Fox, you see these commercials around the clock. And I got to be honest with you, by the time the World Cup arrives, I'm going to be pretty sick of the commercials.
But you're going to be happy that the World Cup is kicked off because the commercials are over.
Yes, exactly. That too.
DG, I'm going to ask you a big, big question.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you're going to go with your head or your heart. What is going to be the score between England and the USA?
Oh, boy. Do I have to answer honestly?
You answer with your head or your heart. It's entirely up to you.
All right. I'm going to say this. I'll say 1-1.
Is that head or heart? That's heart, surely.
I don't know. What's the area between the head and the heart called? It's probably somewhere in there. The neck? Yeah, the esophagus. That's the esophagus pick. It's 1-1. It's 1-1. I think that's where we're going there because, and I didn't even put you up to this. You know that. I did not put you up to this, but you said even if it was a draw, that you would be the loser of the bet. And I still do not even think you should have to honor that. So that's why I'm not motivated to say it's going to be 1-1. That's just what my heart feels. It's going to be one of those. I think the United States is going to do all they can to so-called take the air out of the ball and be content with maybe getting the 1 point.
Do you know what? I will concede that the last time we played each other in a World Cup, it finished 1-1. And that was, well, I mean, it was 12 years ago. But also our recent form has been pretty bad. So it wouldn't surprise me if you came up with a goal. I'm going 3-0 England.
3-0. Ooh. That's not good for me then.
No. It's not.
Not gonna be.
We'll have to get a watch party going, won't we, between the UK and the US?
Yeah, virtual watch party. I'm all good with that.
Good lads.
And that's a holiday here for us. Think about it. That's the day after Thanksgiving we're playing that game.
Perfect. Oh my gosh.
That's like a holiday. Everybody gets like the day off the next day. So
love that. Who is going to win the World Cup?
I'm going because there has been a lot of parity with the World Cups over the last several. I'm actually going with a team that is still considered a soccer power, of course. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they've won the most World Cups, but they haven't won in 20 years, Richie. And I'm going with Brazil.
I knew you were going to go there because I was going to go with that as well, to be honest.
Really?
European teams don't really do too well when it comes to playing World Cups outside of Europe. Well, listen, as this is a bit of a competitive thing and it's predictions, I'll let you have Brazil. And I'm going to go, if you've gone Brazil, I'm going to go Argentina.
I knew you were going there. Hey, it's Messi's last World Cup. It's his big farewell. Yeah. I don't know about that. We'll see.
Who's going to be top goal scorer?
If it's not going to be the United States, of course, I have to pull for my, you know, my my origin country, of course, which is Portugal. But I can't say Cristiano Ronaldo because he's, you know, kind of on his last legs when it comes to this tournament as well. So I can't go him. How about if we're going to go all in on Brazil, why don't we go Neymar?
Not a bad shout at all. I am going to go my pick for top goal scorer, Kylian Mbappe.
Okay.
Kylian Mbappe, if not Harry Kane. But that means that England are going to go far, which I don't think they necessarily will. So I'm going to go Kylian Mbappe. This time in a month, the World Cup will be kicking off. I'll be absolutely buzzing. I cannot wait.
I love the World Cup. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Dan, listen, thank you so much for providing the knowledge, as per usual, particularly with that New York Jets origin question. Incredible knowledge. And now remember, throughout the season, we want to hear from you. If you have a question that you want to ask the knowledge, DG, get in touch with Dan and myself using the hashtag JetsTouchdownUK, and we will answer it. The show is a Shooting Shark production in partnership with Sport 5 and the New York Jets. We'll be back with you after the Jets take on the Buffalo Bills. Until then, peace.
Can't we just go over like the PA system in this building? You would think that somebody in this building knows why we're called the Jets. I feel like if you're like the supermarket and they like, you know, somebody goes over the intercom, it's like, can somebody come to aisle 5, please? Excuse me. Somebody know why we're called the Jets.
This is one of my favorite moments from recording the pod. Why is the team that we work for called the team that we work for? Why?
And you know that this is going to be on like the B-roll footage.
It's got to. Goes.